This is Slaypedia's podcast, and I am proud to introduce our host, specializing in corporate development for women in executive leadership, branding strategist, Daniela. She has been on several podcasts and is the founder of I Am Runway. Today's subject is what wealthy people don't do.
Hello and welcome to Slaypedia's podcast. I'm your host, Daniela, and I'm so glad that you decided to click and join today. Today's topic that I'm going to cover is what wealthy people do differently. Yes, many of us have a different mindset when it comes to money than people who are accustomed to making tons of money. And I want to let you know that I'm going to just give you some really high level quick tips for you to kind of think about and question yourself so you can see where you stand with your relationship with your finances. So let's go. So recently, I just joined a success group or mastermind circle, as many call it, and it's made up of business owners here in the Houston, Texas, Austin, and Dallas area. We meet 2 times a month to discuss success, stories, failures, discuss what's working for us and what's not, offer advice, expertise, and talk about events that are going on in our industry. And I'm so grateful to be a part of this group. I'm also getting more mentorship than I've ever had in my professional sense, and it's pretty awesome. And I'm always taking notes, but something that I take notes on that I don't think a lot of other people know about is I'm always intrigued by wealthy people's perception of money or the emotional tie that they have to money in comparison to people who work every day. So I'm going to go ahead and explain that in a little bit more detail. When I say wealthy, I mean wealthy because about 90% of the people in that group generate 7 figures in income of revenue and have very impressive projections for 2018. So while this group has helped me grow in leaps and bounds and helped me to understand business very well, what I'm learning from the most, though, is their reactions and attitudes towards failure, success, and money. So why do I say that? I'm going to move into my first of 5 points. Wealthy people don't marry their money. They're married to the purpose. They're married to the hustle. They are married to the business plan or the excitement that they have for the potential that that business has. They are not married to money. They are not doing the business to make money. They don't see it as though, once I do this, I'm going to start making money, or once this happens, I'm going to start making money. They know that money is the end result, but they're more passionate and excited about oiling that wheel and getting that business moving. What do you mean by that? So what I'm saying when I say marry, I use that term because when I think of marriage, I think of being completely committed, being in love with, seeing a future, having a purpose for investing your time. And if you get that way with your business, if you marry the purpose and if you marry the hustle and the business plan and the end goal and the goal all around, and you are actually enjoying each moment because you know what the end result is, this is going to create an everlasting tenacity and never dying persistence. And a lot of entrepreneurs have this who are very successful. For entrepreneurs who have a lot of startups that fail, they have a tendency to be married more to just trying to make money real fast or just trying to get rich. And people who are always trying to get rich are chasing after money. And so they'll do any and everything. And they never really develop the momentum that it takes to really get a business going because they lack tenacity and persistence. So that's what happens when you chase money. Money going out, money coming in, you should pretty much have that same leveled out feeling about that, okay? When you're excited, when you get paid or you get a bonus or you come over extra money from income tax, that excitement should be the same when you spend money or invest it into your business. So make sure you are balancing your relationship and emotional ties to money. The cycle of money, the cycle of wealth is pretty much money goes out, money comes in. You have to spend money in order to be able to make money. And one of the reasons why this is really hard for the middle class is because we have so much on our plate that when we invest in our side businesses our education for ourselves to be better, it feels more like a task and it feels more as if we are paying another bill. So we create this aura of stress around our own goals and purpose in life. So that's why I'm saying you need to really make sure that you're balancing out your emotions when it comes to your finances. On the opposite end of the wealthy spectrum, you have people who are very scarce with money and they're operating in scarcity mode. Even they have the opportunity and can make millions and become wildly successful if they marry their purpose. And if you don't believe me, just look at Dr. Dre, look at Ice Cube, look at Damon John, look at Master P. Their situation, circumstance, and surroundings had nothing to do with the people that they became because they had a persistence, they had a tenacity. They were married to their passion for music. They were married to their passion for production. So once you marry your purpose, you can't lose. And I think that's why money just comes so easily to people who have that type of mindset because they know that money is the end result, but they have something that they're willing to ride out. So if you think of Matthew Knowles, the same thing. He invested so much in getting Destiny's Child off the ground that it's not so much he was just trying to make a dollar. He was actually trying to push them into their purpose, and he saw the potential of the group. And, you know, look at them now. So with that being said, I just want to make sure that you take the time to pause for a minute and ask yourself this. Are you married to your business, your concept, your idea, your plan, your form of artistry? Or are you married to making money? Ask yourself that question. What's lighting your fire? Is it the thought of having money to show off? Or is it the thought of finally having your business something to where you can dedicate your whole day and all your time into it? Let that be the driving force that pushes you when you are making financial decisions. And with that, you can't fail. One of the books that I'm going to recommend for this point exactly that I'm going over is The Power of Broke by Damon John. It's pretty much about how when you are limited with resources or funds, how that can inspire creativity on a level where more successful businesses cannot tap into. The most creative business endeavors and apps and computer applications or whatever you want to call it, the most successful businesses start from a place of limitation. And it's because they are scarce, they have to get very creative. So pull from your creative space. Don't let finances or debt looming over you become something that actually stops your momentum of tenacity. Let that be something that only engages you into it even more. Because every startup business has a point of, do I pull out right now or do I keep riding this out? So I think if you read the book, I think that's going to help you kind of adjust some of your feelings or some of your thoughts towards finances. So the second point or tip that I'm going to move into is uncertainty doesn't matter to wealthy people. There's a quote by Damon John. If you want to follow him on Instagram, it's at the Shark Damon. This quote says, to a true entrepreneur, uncertainty doesn't matter. We've always had uncertainty. Entrepreneurs wake up every single day and deal with adversity. That really hits me to my core because that is so true. If you are really passionate about chasing your goals or your dreams or your aspirations or whatever it is that you may be en route to, you have to understand that risk will be there. Uncertainty will be there. But if you are sure and you gain the confidence and the assuredness that you need to keep that business going or to just even keep writing out what that looks like when you can't do anything else, that will not fail you. When you chase money, it forces you to run away when you see a risk. So that's what I've noticed when I'm talking to people who have a very unhealthy relationship with money and people who have a very healthy relationship with money. Being married to money will cause you to be very scattered, especially if you're always thinking about uncertainty. Think of the person in your family or a friend. Every time you talk to them, they're always starting a new business or a new idea, and you kind of want to ask them, well, what happened to the last thing? Because this is like the fifth idea you've brought me this year or this month. Money comes and goes. So that is something you can't control. The average person panics when they consider this. The wealthy person understands that this is the cycle of wealth. So really think about that. When you see or hear the words, money will come and go. For some people, that creates anxiety. For some people, they understand that that's the cycle of wealth. So it's just pretty much perception. That's the only thing that stands in between you and your breakthrough to get to where you need to be with your business and for it to generate the money that you expect it to. The wealthy understand that the cycle of wealth is necessary. They take risk. They are not afraid of uncertainty. They do research when uncertainty starts to overtake them, and they understand that they have to spend money to make money. Chasing money and feeling a tie to it, or feeling like you need to make more money. And when you marry that idea, it causes a lot of anxiety, stress, and burnout. And this is very, very typical for a person who is always anxious about money. I know people who make $200,000 a year. And because they are married to the idea of making money, they can't even stop to just really enjoy where they are right now in their career, because the anxiety and the stress from being married to making more and more money is causing them to experience a burnout. So when your idea isn't turning a profit, you give up and move on to the next idea. And a lot of people that I've counseled or mentored or worked with, I do brand strategies. And every time I sit down with my clients, I notice that when they hit a moment of frustration, I have to kind of help them build up that tenacity and that persistence, and understanding that you may knock for opportunity 1,000 times and it'll be 1,001 when it goes through. So having that mindset of not giving up. Adversity will come. Adversity will never not be existent, at least in this life. Studies have shown that social media is a dangerous place. And even when we're just browsing our phones, we are actually looking at someone's life from a perspective that they would like us to see it. So social media can also cause you to become a money chaser and not a purpose chaser. When you see people who appear to just kind of have a lot of money, or they're doing the same things you're doing and they have a more successful business, what that person is not showing you is the adversity or the rough points or what is really happening in their life, or if they even really have it like that. So I think social media should just be a place. If you are a true hardcore entrepreneur, social media is a place for you to find new clients. That's it. Social media should not be a place for you to compare your life to other people, for you to really be concerned about what other people are doing, for you to track other people and measure it up against yours. If you want to know what your competitors are doing, social media is great. If you want to know what tools your competitors are doing, or what new apps could help you in your business, and where your new clients are, what they like, what they don't like, that's what social media is for. Anytime I'm on Facebook or Instagram, I'm looking at what my competitors are doing, and I'm researching my clients and what they like and what they have a tendency, what groups they tend to join on Facebook, what they like on Instagram, who they're following. So I'm doing my research. I could care less what people are doing at my church or in my friendship circle or people I went to high school with or whatever. Make sure that you keep in mind that adversity will come. And make sure you're not comparing yourself to other people's pretend or social media life. It's a very dangerous thing. And another thing, a lot of people in my wealth circle pay people to manage their social media. So they don't even know what other people are doing. They have a team of people who manage their social media for them. Every now and then they may get on and put a tweet or drop a line on Instagram or laugh at a video, but they're not on there 24/7. So check your priorities and check where you're investing your time, and understand that adversity will come no matter what. The third point that I wrote was that education is vital and constant. It never, ever dies. When you think of a Steve Jobs, or when you think of Damon John or Kevin Leary or anybody off Shark Tank or whoever you consider to be your shero or hero in business, your icons, if you look at that person, you would think that the only thing that they're caught up into is managing their business. That is not true. Entrepreneurs and wealthy people are constantly learning. They are learning whether they sit in a lecture at a college. They are learning on YouTube. They are learning reading books. They are learning going to events and seminars. They are always learning. They're the first to sign up for webinars. They're the first to sign up for a webinar from their competitor. They always are checking the pulse of their industry. So make sure that you understand that throughout life, you should not have a problem ever being the student again. So I feel like life is like a university, and you'll always be a student. And until you get to the end of that journey, you may mentor some people, you may teach some people, but until you get to the end of that journey, you're not done learning. And I think that's something that wealthy people have. I've noticed that they have no problem being corrected or taught something. In my success group, I really admire that about the men in the group, especially because they don't have a sense of, oh, I know everything. Or, oh, I think I got this. Because if you take on that attitude that no one can tell you anything, or you're very private or hesitant to ask for help or learn, or if you do not have a mentor, or you feel like you don't need a mentor, you're only heightening and you're only giving more chance for failure. So the whole point of a mentor and the whole point of being a part of a group, or the whole point of constant learning, is so that you can get to your destination faster. So it's great if you graduated or completed college. It's great you have a degree. This isn't small by any feat, but it can't be where you rest. Average working class people feel that if when they get their degree, life is good because they're going to make a little bit more money, and they stop their learning there because they feel like they went to school, that's enough. Not wealthy person or even a highly successful person. When I was working at Shell and I had the opportunity to start going to our board meetings and meetings that involved executive management, I noticed that we were always talking about what book we read. CEOs have been proven time and time again through statistics and studies have shown that CEOs have a tendency to read 60 to 70 books a year, if not more. That is very true for the people in my success circle. In a 3-month span that I have recently gotten a new mentor, he's already read like 15 books. And I've only known him for 3 months, and he's went through 15 books already. And he works in 1.5 hours a day for personal development time, which is when he reads. So everybody gets the same 24 hours. What are you doing with yours? Because they don't have extra time. It's just that they're planning it out better and they're more efficient at fitting in time to learn. I also know another lady in my success circle. She built her online business by taking YouTube classes. So I thought that was pretty interesting. You know, she went to Yale. She has an Ivy League degree. But more of what she makes money off of is what she learned on YouTube. How ironic is that? She didn't even use her degree that she paid all this money for and got into debt for. So ask yourself, are you learning? Are you building? Are you growing? Are you around people who like to learn? That's another thing. Are you looking for events or classes online? And if you want to know where to start, like looking for that, if you can probably start going to meetups for professionals in your area, that's a good place to start networking and get a test or understanding of what they're doing to expand or learn about things in their industry. You know, if you work in oil and gas, are you a part of industry events and mixers? If you work in the technology industry, are you aware if Google or any of the major tech companies are having any seminars? I saw something where Google had an open seminar to the public. You know, things like that you got to kind of keep track of. And it was on Meetup when I was in LA. So my question to you would be, how much effort are you putting into that constant level of education? I would say you probably should put in maybe 1 hour a day to some type of personal development, some type of dedicated plan to learning something by the end of next year. So that's something that I've noticed from my mentors. They have lesson and curriculum plans for the year. Like one of my mentors, she told me by next year, she wants to know how to automate, you know, a part of her website all by herself. And she's going to learn the code. And she showed me her accomplishments over the past 5 years from watching videos on YouTube. So she's never stopped, and she's not ever in a place where she's not learning. And she's always introducing me to really good books when I'm stuck somewhere or have a question. So keep that in mind. The wealthy are always in the know, and they are constantly allowing themselves to be educated. Moving on to my fourth point, wealthy people are solution-oriented, and that's all they seek are solutions. They encourage their employees to find new solutions, and this also can make your employees feel more valued and more valuable because you're not just giving them a task to do, staple this, email that, do this, do that. When you ask for solutions and you ask them to brainstorm and contribute, for a person to be able to see their contribution to a company and for everyone to have to put effort into their ideas, that inspires people to work harder and be more passionate and excited about the work that they produce. So they're making their employees happier by allowing their employees to be a part of solutions. So when you're sitting and you can't figure out a new social media strategy or a new way to get new clients, the question I would have for you is, are you allowing your employees to have input on how business practices, policies, or things work in the company? That's what makes a person feel valuable. Think about where you work. How does it feel when you offer a suggestion and no one listens? It's pretty frustrating. You go home and you vent to your husband, girlfriend, boyfriend, a spouse, a wife, like, hey, I'm saying this over and over and nobody's listening. So always have a platform for people who work for you to express their ideas and solutions. And I'm just going to kind of switch gears real quick. If you are working for a company and you're wondering, okay, so how does that apply to me? If you want to move up in a company so that you can make more money to invest in your business or just make more money to have more investing options, my suggestion would be to research the issues and the most persistent problem that your company or department faces, pull away, and find a solution. How do you do that? Research, research, research. Start getting into the rhythm of finding solutions so that every meeting you're in, you're offering a solution. Every time your manager or your boss is talking to you, you're offering a solution. You're not gossiping. You're not complaining about the policies, because what does that do? Nothing. It doesn't change anything. It just upsets you. You're not afraid to discuss what solutions and ideas you have. Some of them may stick, some of them may not, but always make sure that you pull away and you come up with solutions, because that'll roll over into you becoming a successful entrepreneur. You'll always be solution oriented, not the person that complains and freaks out. So they solve problems and they are excited about finding new ways to solve a problem. And you know, that's pretty much what's in between you and making more money in corporate America or in your business. How are you finding solutions to your problems? Most often get this from my clients who own very small businesses that make less than $80,000 a year. They hit these bumps where, or these spurts, where they'll make money and then they won't, and they'll make money and then they won't. And the question always goes back to, what is the biggest problem you're facing right now? Face that problem head on and look for a solution. And when I say look for it, I mean read books, go to seminars, network, find a group of people to speak to, or go to a business that's similar to yours and ask to meet with the owner. You know, you have to get comfortable with seeking solutions by any means necessary. Some of the best apps and social media platforms like, you know, Snapchat and Instagram, they all solve problems. You know, for the person that doesn't like to have to type in all that caption, Instagram, you can just put a picture up and keep it moving. That's more for a visual person. Stores like Nasty Gal, if you like vintage rocker type chick clothing, that's what she focuses on, Sophia Amoruso. She's no longer over Nasty Gal, but the reason why I was uberly successful was because she knew her industry and she knew her market and she knew her audience, and she provided solutions for them. They liked vintage clothing. She did a lot of vintage shopping at Goodwill and other stores that sold secondhand clothing. Rent the Runway, they solved a problem and they're now millionaires. So the woman that used to try on a dress that cost $500, wear it one time and return it back to the store, that's pretty much what Rent the Runway is. You know, you want to wear the new Gucci dress you saw Beyonce in, you can just rent it from them and return it when you're done. So a lot of these successful businesses did not reinvent the wheel. They simply looked at persisting problems for people and they decided to become solution oriented. So that's the difference between a person who's not so wealthy and a person who's very wealthy. Wealthy people have a tendency to spend immense amount of resources and time focused on solving problems. So ask yourself, what's the biggest problem you're facing in your career and in your business? And ask yourself, what solutions worked for other companies similar to yours? Or what is out there? Have you been networking, calling, and asking people for input and advice, or polling your family? Get to a point where you're always seeking solutions. If you want a quick tip, get on LinkedIn and get connected to people in your industry and get comfortable talking to them. And my last point is the mental state, even in the worst of times, is abundance. There was a man in our group who was facing a huge bankruptcy. He was stressed. We prayed for him and I watched him go through this process. What he never lost sight of was his purpose and his business. And he knew that he would get that money back again. So it wasn't that he wasn't worried, because facing a bankruptcy is, that's a big deal. But he was sure he would get the money back again, because he told me that very quote that I quoted earlier, money comes, money goes, but we'll be fine. And he has had this mindset of abundance, not scarcity. Even in the midst of having financial issues, he was still making the meetings. He was still finding moments to invest. He was still reading and looking at what's new in the tech industry. And just this past November, he just sold a part of his company for $13 million. So because he stayed focused on abundance, money's coming in, money's going out, and he did not let that put him in a place of fear and crumble under the pressure of that, his mindset stayed very positive, and he had such confidence in his product that look at what it ended up turning over for him. So again, keep in mind that what you think, you attract. What you attract, it becomes your situation and it becomes your circumstance and it becomes your life. So speak forward positively, think upward and onward. And I hope that these tips have helped you. If you need anything from me, please feel free to email me or message me on Instagram at Slaypedia. I do have days during the week on Facebook where I'll answer questions for many of my people in my community. And thank you so much for tuning in. God bless you and good night.
Be sure to subscribe and follow at Slaypedia on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Slaypedia. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode.